you're serious about private label and getting into private label and advancing with private label very, very quickly, here's a great opportunity. And there's only 9 slots left. So it's not like, hey, think about it. This is a pull the trigger if you're in and get in fast. It's Amazing Freedom Private Label Retreat in Breckenridge, Colorado, May 19th. Through the 22nd of 2017. You're responsible for your airfare to get to Denver and your way home. That's what you have to worry about. The rest is taken care of. All transportation, all meals, all housing. Oh, the house? It's a 15,000 square foot home. Yep, 15,000 square foot home. First class meals catered by an executive chef on site. He will make it right there for you. We've got private label 101 to 10001. I mean, it's everything you need. Finding products, bringing products to market. It's one-on-one personal training. It's a handful of people. There's only 9 slots left. Andy Slammons, Nate Slammons, Liron Hirschkorn will be there to help you be successful. This is not cheap, but it is advanced and it's compressed into a couple days. Here's the other great thing. Andy's going to partner with you on a couple products while you're there. So you have an opportunity to get into the private label game with Andy. If you're interested, there's no time to wait because there's only 9 slots left. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat.
Welcome to the e-commerce momentum podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce momentum podcast. This is episode 174, Fred McKinnon. Now, this is a great story of someone who has figured out a side hustle. Now, what's cool about Fred is that he is a worship pastor, and he has had a side hustle, for lack of a better term, for a long period of time. And I think that's probably one of the coolest things that I've learned about Fred is that this is not new. His business, music, he's been working that side of the business for a long time, and he was able to make money at it. And I just think it's a great story that continues into an incredible story on Amazon. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the e-commerce momentum podcast. I'm very excited tonight to have a guest who's also a fellow podcaster, which I appreciate, and I know the effort, and I'm very excited for that. He's got the voice for radio too, and I appreciate that. But he's also a dad with 4 little ones. And that's got to be a challenge. Man, I'm so excited to have Fred McKinnon on. Welcome, Fred.
Hey, Steve. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on because, you know, I'm all about story. And as I started to peel back your story, I mean, you've got a great story. I mean, you've got a full life. I think that's a fair way to say that, or am I putting it mildly?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's go back before kids and... You are a worship pastor currently, full-time.
That's right.
And did you have a calling right from day one? Did you always knew you were going to be a pastor?
No, I never really thought that I would be doing that at all, to tell you the truth. Now, I would say I had a musical calling.
Okay.
I've been a musician since I was old enough to crawl, really. And I come from a musical family, so I loved music, but I wasn't really a fan of most church music that I grew up hearing. So I really was going to pursue studio record production, being a record producer, songwriter development, that kind of thing. So I was really sort of surprised that I wound up serving. I had all intentions of serving and being in a church because of the faith that I come, Christian faith that I come from, but never really anticipated being on staff in a church. And that's just kind of the way the path kind of laid out that way for me. So I'm one of these guys in e-commerce world who could easily quit my full-time job. But I don't want to because I love it.
So, I've heard Joel Osteen say that too, that he had no intentions of being up front, you know, until his dad passed away. And then he had no choice but to step up. And then he realized, wow, this was what I really was led to do. So you went to school for music, right? Got your degree in music. You were going to work at churches in some form or the other. How did you end up leading worship? I mean, was it just like, hey, we're short this week, we need you there? Or was it the calling?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was the music guy. I was the producer, the band leader, the arranger. there was no microphone near me at all. And I liked it that way. I liked to be on the keyboard and direct the band and write out the parts and tell the horns what to play and that sort of a thing. And I graduated from college, and was my senior year of college, I guess I kind of started thinking maybe, just maybe, perhaps I should take at least a couple of quarters of voice lessons. Because if nothing else, maybe I'll have to be able to sing a part to teach somebody what they're supposed to do. And after college, guy called me up, friend of a friend, you know, the Bubba Network down here in Georgia, a friend of a friend. He was actually in Mississippi, and he was looking for somebody to come out and do music in his church. And I wasn't really super interested in that, but it was the door that opened for me. So I went out to Mississippi with a couple of suitcases and started working there, and actually kind of fell in love with it. A couple of years later, I had an opportunity to come back home to Georgia, where I've been since 1995.
Wow. You know, when you, so you've seen both sides of it. Are you able, you mentioned earlier, you didn't care for the music that you grew up with, right? In some ways.
Yeah. Right.
Were you able, I mean, was that a part of the deal, is that you would do it on your terms?
Well, no. Church music really evolved.
Okay. Okay.
Dramatically. You know, I grew up in a Methodist church, and it's not that I didn't like it. I mean, I grew up singing hymns, and I think those are great, and I still do that. But most of the music that I would listen to on the radio or cassette tapes back then or whatever, just it wasn't really anything that I was super interested in. And over time, what they would call contemporary worship music or modern worship music sort of came on the scene there in the 80s and early 90s, and I really liked it. I really liked what I was hearing. It was a new way to relate to music, and I had a knack for it, so all of a sudden I was interested again.
All of a sudden you were there. See, I'm a Methodist, and in our church we have a traditional service and a contemporary service, and it's night and day, the music. I mean, it is traditional, you know, hymnals and that whole deal, or in the back service, as they like to call it, right? There's that loud music. There's some loud music back there, Steve, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, hey, to each his own. And
it definitely shooting arrows at each other.
Yeah, it definitely attracts a different type of person, and that's the beauty of it to me, is that you go where you feel led. To me, you know, whatever you're into, that's what's kind of cool, you know. So okay, all right, so you decided, you came back, and at that point were you full-time in the church?
I was.
Okay. Sure. So was. Did you have a side position? Because in my experience, and you know, I'm pretty involved in my church, unless you've been in the church business for a long time, most of the ministers typically don't make a lot of money, and especially if you have a family, it becomes even more challenging. And so a lot of them have side, I don't want to call them side hustles, because that's a negative that's a negative connotation with the church, right? But they have something that they do on the side. How about you?
Yeah, I always did. And honestly, for me, part of it was income related, but the real truth, I guess, is it's in my DNA. It's, you know, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur.
Well, why is it in your DNA? That would insinuate your parents had it.
Well, yeah, not exactly. You know, I think my grandfather, from what I understand, was an amazing entrepreneur. And my older brother, my oldest brother, is the same. So it definitely kind of worked its way down through that capacity. But as a kid, you know, I was playing the piano and making music, and if I wasn't doing that or playing with my friends, I was on my bicycle going around the neighborhood selling candy bars and go buy a six pack of Cokes and sell them for 50 cents.
You know, what was attractive to you then, Nat? What was it that attracted you besides the money?
Yeah, well, the money, and I think the sense of success and work, and
very
and
cool.
Sort of being able to control my own destiny.
What did your father specifically think about that when he saw that? Was he encouraged or discouraged?
Oh, yeah, he loved it.
Okay.
More power to me, yeah.
Okay, cool. Supportive. Yeah, there's some people that get turned off, oh, you shouldn't be doing that, you know, you could be taking a bit. But some people are like, wow, I love the initiative, and you get it. You know, as a dad, I love when my boys do something like that, because it's so cool. It makes me like, guys, you get it. You can go and feed if you have to, right?
That's right.
Okay, so you come back and you decide, hey, I assume, you know, being a musician, you might teach lessons or something like that. That's typical what I would see in our music groups. They would teach student lessons and things like that. Was that what when you came to the church back to your town, was that what you did on the side, or what did you do?
Yeah, I did teach lessons, I did, but I actually had started a music production company.
Oh.
So I was writing music for artists and producing albums for independent artists, mostly Christian artists or gospel artists. A lot of them are, you know, locals. Somebody, you know, the person that, in your church that everybody says, oh, you're so good, you should make a record, you should make an album. And so I was the guy around here they would come to.
Like a vanity press kind of a thing.
Yeah, well, I had studio equipment. We had a studio in our church, and I mean a really nice recording studio. So I would be able to bring people in, and they'd pay me, and I would hire the musicians. And I learned the nature of the music business and would offer a package, a turnkey package that included my talent and coaching them in the studio. And it would include the hiring of the musicians and the replication of the CDs or the cassettes or whatever, and the artwork and everything else. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I did that a lot. And then the internet kind of jumped ahead. And so I began to market their music online. That's really how I got into e-commerce.
Really?
Was marketing the artists that I would produce. I would market their albums online.
How?
This is before CD Baby. This was before.
Yeah, right. How would you do that?
I had a little website. And actually, in the old days, we were on AOL.com. Oh. And they had these little AOL had these news groups, I guess. These little where you could upload a MIDI file or a MP3 file. I don't think it was MP3 back then. WAV file. But and I would write out the music and the song and make PDFs of it and put it on there and encourage people to download it for free. And so part of the whole production package was also publishing. So I owned the publishing rights to those songs, and churches would use those songs and report the usage to the copyright agencies. We'd get royalties and things like that.
So, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it just kind of took off.
No kidding. I mean, you know, thinking about today, it's like, oh my God, that sounds so simple. Back then, there was nothing simple. Everything you described was hard.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing. I mean, even creating a PDF was not easy, right? I mean, none of that was easy back then.
No, you had to have Acrobat Reader or something, Acrobat something to generate a PDF. It wasn't nearly as easy as it is now.
Yeah, and uploading, if you're using AOL, I mean, was it the old kick-a-choo kind of thing still?
Absolutely, man. The old 14.4 modem that you dial.
Yeah, how long did that take to upload?
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
That's funny.
That was the day, you know, when Firefox was out, and Internet Explorer or Firefox, Mozilla. And if you wanted to download Mozilla, you started, you know, and you went to bed and you hoped that you didn't get kicked off while you slept.
Right. For the next morning. Don't pick up the phone, guys. Right. Don't pick up the phone. I remember that. All right. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break because, you know, people are like, okay, you know, this is great. We're talking a little bit of e-commerce. We just tapped on it. Well, let me leap ahead and just explain that, you know, Fred did $14.5 million in sales last year. So I'm going to leave with that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. SolutionsforEcommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her, and most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-commerce, the number 4, Solutions for E-commerce /Momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. SolutionsforEcommerce.com. Interesting guy, huh? Well, in this segment, we're going to talk about growing an e-commerce business. Now, we're not talking about a small e-commerce business here. He's well into the 7 figures. And what's very cool to me is that he plans on pulling it back this year. And we talk about why in this segment, but I think it's really important. Again, you start to figure things out. What I also like is that he's selling on every possible channel. And I think he's using Channel Advisor and he talks about it there. But the concept again is that you can be in multiple places with your same product and you can have it fulfilled many different ways. And it's a very intriguing story, and I probably pepper him a lot because I'm intrigued when I get into this stuff to find out more information. But boy, it's just really, really well done, and how to manage all that just blows my mind. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Fred McKinnon. And I had to leave that just to get people to say, "Whoa, okay, I've got their attention now." So they're out there thinking about that. So you, how long did your first dabble into e-commerce last? How long did you do that?
It lasted for several years, and like everything else, Steve, it evolved.
Okay.
So it evolved. It evolved from selling the CDs. So we had a little shopping cart, you know, where we sold our, and I had several myself of instrumental CDs, piano CDs, things like that, that people would buy. So I had to learn how to set up a shopping cart. I had to learn what SSL security was. I had to learn what a merchant account was and how to take credit cards.
This is hard stuff back then. Again, yeah, this isn't like that it is today where we have a Shopify you know, you could pop one in and in literally 15 seconds have a landing page created with the shopping cart, right? No way. Right. Back then, it's complicated.
Back then, it was OS Commerce, you know, and so I had to literally learn PHP code and things like that to be able to make it work. And from that... you know, the artists, they didn't just want to market their music. They wanted to have their own website.
Right. Sure.
For their own, you know, for themselves to build their fan list. And so we started reselling web space. So now our music production packages included come to the studio for 5 days, get 500 cassettes and 500 CDs and this and that, and a website with your own domain and a shopping cart. And so we began to sell web hosting.
How much would that package have been back then?
Then it was about $20 a month.
So, but I'm talking about the 500 CDs, 500 cassettes, 5 days in the studio. I mean, how much is that?
Yeah. Well, that could have been, it could have been anywhere from $3,000 or $4,000 to $10,000 or $15,000.
No kidding.
Depending on, it could have been even more depending on what their budget was. If they had big budget, then we would do some of the work and then we'd fly to Nashville and, you know, have more professional engineers and mastering producers do a lot of the work.
And they're not cheap.
No, not at all.
So it sounds like a lot of money, but by the time you're done paying everybody, it's probably not. Right. Wow. All right. So this became more complicated because for $20 a month, now you're hosting a website for them.
Correct.
Did you, so were you doing the programming of the website and everything, putting all the, you know, content out there?
Not much. I did a little bit of that, and then what happened was our hosting company began to grow, and it began to attract other customers outside of music world. So before we knew it, we had, you know, a couple of hundred web hosting customers, and from everything from schools to churches to artists to businesses that had nothing to do with religion at all.
And this was your side business. I want to make sure I'm contextually correct on this, right? You were full-time in the church, and this was your side business.
Correct. So at that time, you know, I had a full-time website builder, graphic designer, and outsourced out tech support and, you know, had some help.
You don't do anything small. Okay. So that's moving along. The internet's moving along, chugging along. And somewhere around 2005, did things change? Or what occurred to transition you from running a web hosting music business to start selling on, probably, I would assume, eBay. I don't know whether it was Amazon at that point.
Yeah, it actually was. And I've told this story a few places before, and my line is always the same. I always kind of laugh and say, it all started with Legos. Lego toys. I was running the web hosting company, working at the church, and one of my older brothers, I'm the youngest of four siblings, so two older brothers and an older sister. One of the older brothers reached out and said, look, I'm not good on the internet like you are. My son wants Lego Bionicles for his birthday, and I can't find them anywhere. Please, can you help me? And he's like, do you know how to do eBay? I'm like, well, sure, yeah, I can do eBay. So I get on eBay and start searching for Lego Bionicles to help the old brother out. And what I discovered, Steve, was there were some for sale, but what I really noticed was that every single seller on eBay that was selling Lego Bionicles sold them. I did the little advanced search. Even way back then, 10, 12 years ago, you could search completed listings.
Right.
And it was green, you know, if it had sold.
So what was going on in your mind? Were you saying, I have stuff for sale and not all of it sells, and yet they have Lego Bionicles and all of it? I mean, is that what your mind was making the connection?
No, my mind said, my mind forgot all about my poor nephew who needed a birthday present. All my mind could think of was, wow, here's a business opportunity. I wonder where I can find Lego Bionicles wholesale.
So you knew, you saw the demand. Just seeing all that green said, oh my goodness, there's a demand. Yeah. And probably the panic in your brother's voice saying, I can't find them anywhere.
So I started Googling and searching for how do I find discount toys to resell? How can I find wholesale toys to resell? And the way I'm wired, when I get my mind into something like that, I go down the rabbit hole. Don't come up for a few days. So I think I spent an entire night until the sun came up reading about how to find different wholesale distributors that I could buy toys from. And I learned about drop shipping, which I had never heard of that before. What's a drop shipper? And long story short, I found a directory that would allow me to type in a product like toys, and it would recommend drop shippers or wholesalers that would allow me to set up an account. And I did it, and I told my web designer the next day, hey, let's make a website, let's buy a domain, whip us up a logo. And a couple of days later, we had a little toys website up, and I signed up for Amazon. There, it wasn't called Seller Center, it was called a Z Shop back then.
And this is 2005.
Right. Or 2004-ish, 2005-ish, I've kind of lost track.
Okay.
But probably, I believe it would have been the winter of 2004. And you know, FBA didn't exist, and none of that was here yet.
Right.
So we formatted a feed for Amazon, and we pushed it to Amazon and to our little OS Commerce store. And a little business was born, you know, doing flipping stuff online.
So you were never taking hold of the product in this scenario, right? You were buying it from somebody who allowed you to buy it from them, and they agreed that they would ship it to whoever. And
that's
that was
right.
The model they used. And so you pay a little bit of a premium for that service, right? You don't get the best
right.
price because they're doing the work, but you never took hold of it. And even back in 2004, you could write you had a programmer, so he could write an interface. No kidding. I mean, that's pretty cutting edge.
We had no interface. We had Excel spreadsheets. So that was it.
So somebody ordered something and they said, hey, I want a Lego Bionicle. And you had it listed on your site. You went out to these other sites. You knew what you could buy in theory. You assume
right.
they have it in inventory. You hope. You pray.
Yes.
Right. And so
right.
then you would put it up on your site and you would mark it up. How would you mark it up? Let's talk about that. Because drop shippers are right now, it's kind of becoming a hot topic in some of the circles. So walk me through how that works.
Well, initially, the markup was just really poor.
Okay.
Because you're competing against everyone else selling that same product.
And doing the same thing.
Doing the same thing. And what makes it even worse is that most of them are buying from the same person you're buying from.
Okay. So there's nothing that would distinguish you versus somebody else. It's price, because the product is the same. So it's price, right? Pretty much.
Right. So all I could think is I want to get rid of this new seller badge next to me on Amazon. I don't want it to say new seller, and I want to have feedback. I want to have reviews. So I've marked it up very low, very, very low. Probably, 3 or 4%.
No kidding. So wait, hold on a second, because I want to get this. So if it was selling for $20, your cost would have been maybe $12, $13. I'm trying to think of what it would be.
Yeah, well, and when I say 2 or 3%, that would be over and above whatever commission I'm expecting. So I know if Amazon's taking 15% in toys, I'm marking it up totally, about 18% to 19%.
Okay, so you're taking and saying, okay, I'm buying this item that right now is for sale for $20. I'm buying it from Steve's Wholesale Market for $13, marking it up, because it's more than half, more than wholesale, right? Because they're making money on it. Marking it up by 18% or whatever it is. And so now I'm selling it for $18, whatever. And it sells fast because you're now undercutting anybody else, right? And so you were content with 3%. And your level of involvement, let me make sure I'm clear on this. It was basically to build a website, get notified that, Bob bought a set of Legos, order the set of Legos from Steve's wholesale site, pay Steve, send it, wait, get paid from Amazon, and wash, rinse, repeat. Is that kind of the model? Right. That's it.
Really, just, again, at this point, it's a hobby. It's like a challenge. Can I do this? This looks interesting.
Okay.
Let's try it. Why not? And I've got a full-time job I'm happy with, so I'm not trying to get rich here, really, at least not now. Let's see what happens. So I did, and we got a few orders, and well, cool. That's a nice little extra spending money here or there with really relatively zero risk.
Right.
Because I'm not buying a lot of widgets that maybe I'm going to have stuck in my garage and I can never unload.
You got paid up front, right? The customer paid you up front. So you have the money. So you could go to Steve's Wholesale and buy it with confidence. You already have the money. You could pay Amazon because you already have the money again. So it's pretty much everything about it. As you said, you get to keep what's left, which you already have in your bank account. So you're right. There's really very little risk, if any.
Well, your risk with any drop shipping situation is that someone else has bought that product up from your distributor before you could get to it.
So the risk is not having the product.
Correct.
Okay. And there was no sinking.
Price increase. Yeah, but, maybe a price change. Like maybe the distributor decided to raise the price $20.
Whoa.
Since you last checked. And then, you have a loss to face, something like that.
And that happened, I'm assuming, right, from time to time. And then you would learn, hey, I better go look at this. And that's why people develop faster software to write more specific to try to fix those things, right?
Correct.
So you would do this. How long did that last?
That lasted for years, and really, at the end of the day, we're still doing it today.
Okay, and I assume the 3% model is probably not there anymore. It's probably a little higher?
It depends.
Okay.
It depends on the brand. It depends on the distributor. But in my experience, when you are mass drop shipping major brands that you're purchasing legitimately through distribution channels that are authorized to sell that brand. Now, that was a mouthful, but it's very important.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to parse that. We're going to pull that apart, because I think that that's going to be one of those things that I think people are going to say, whoa, wait a second, I don't understand.
Right.
But go ahead, just finish the statement, then we'll parse it.
When you are doing that as a drop shipper on these major marketplaces, you're doing really good to clear 3 to 4% margin, net margin. It's very low. It's a volume game. It's not a high profit game. It's a volume game. There's a difference. Go back and parse what I said. I put some qualifications on that, and I said, when you're buying from national distributors who are authorized to sell the brand.
Okay, so let's stop there. Let's just make sure we're clear on this. So is that me buying from Walmart, Shopkins, and sending them to, Mrs. Smith through the Amazon network? Is that a legitimate source? That's not.
No, because that's more like retail arbitrage, where you're buying from a retail store at a great sale price and flipping, which you can, with the right product, you can get way better than 3 to 4%.
Right, because Walmart's paying the shipping if you're buying over a certain dollar amount, right? So Walmart's paying that shipping. So technically, you're getting a much better margin, right?
Right.
Because Amazon... Go ahead.
Yeah, these are wholesale distributors.
Okay.
These are the distributors that are actually stocking the shelves at Walmart.
Okay, so give me an example of that. Well, who would be one that you don't use anymore? Give me an example or a product that you don't do anymore so we don't mess anything up on you. But give me an example.
Sure. There's one that I don't use a lot called Tech Data. And they're more IT, computers, network routing, things like that.
They're buying computers from who? From everybody?
They're getting their inventory from the manufacturers themselves.
Okay, so they're authorized to buy and probably authorized to resell.
Right. They're not in the retail business at all.
Okay.
The only people they are going to sell to is retailers or e-tailers or people who are purchasing for resale. They're wholesale distributors.
Okay.
And the difference is, let's say Sony wants to have their headphones distributed across the United States or wherever their U.S. distributor will be, this company or that company. And it is through that distribution channel that most of your stores, all your mom and pop stores, your brick and mortar stores, and even a lot of your major chains like Walmart or Target receive their product.
Okay.
And they're authorized. They're an official distributor. So what I'm saying that you go and you buy it from someone like that that's legit, and you're going to have low margin because they've got their markup on it as well. And then all your other sellers are buying from that same distributor and listing, and they're getting it for, somewhere around the same price.
Well, let's talk about that because I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. So let's assume it's a Keystone markup for the general stores. Then you got the Walmarts and the Targets, which get big discounts because they're doing bigger volumes, right? That kind of stuff. So you, comparable as an e-tail store, comparable to that mom and pop store, right? Let's just say that's comparable. Let's say they're doing a Keystone markup, and so the merchandise is $50 retail. They're paying $25 plus shipping to get it to their store.
Right.
What would you as a drop shipper likely pay for that same item? It sells for $50 retail. It's $25 wholesale. Plus shipping to get it to their store. What would you be paying as a drop shipper for that same item? Likely.
You're probably going to be getting somewhere around the same price that the retailers are getting, maybe a couple of points higher, but not significant. That whole Keystone markup in some of these major brands, especially in the electronics, is just a fantasy. That's not happening at all.
So it's like Legos at 65%? Is that more likely?
Or much low, well, yeah.
Or the other way.
That, but let's a good example. Let's just say, let's use Sony headphones. I'm just throwing that out. Sony headphones. So the distributor buys those from Sony, and then when the distributor sells to me or anyone else, they may be making 8 to 9%. That's it. Single digit, typically. Is their markup as a distribution, wholesale distributor. And so then you as the reseller, whether you're an e-tail or a retail, brick and mortar, whatever, then your markup is strictly determined by the market. And because of the competition on these products, the price is driven down so low that you're just lucky to get away with more than 5%, or else you're more expensive than everyone else.
Okay, so I'm still going to keep peeling. I'm an accountant. I got to keep peeling because I'm still not there understanding. And so let's go back to that merchandise that sells for $50 retail. So because it's electronics, I think what your point is that nobody's selling them for $50, right? The retail, that's where your point is, right? So that Keystone markup really doesn't apply because the price doesn't hold. That I could dig. Okay. So let's say they're selling for, probably $35 in that scenario. So is the distributor paying, the distributor pricing, because I get distributor pricing, it is lower than wholesale. Okay. So I get that. So they're marking it up 8%, probably getting closer to that wholesale number. And then you're marking it up another 5 on top of that. Okay. I think I can do that math. And then still selling them for $35. And so you're right. You're not making nearly what you could.
Right. right? We started out talking about music and me being a musician, right? So my math is I count to four and start over.
Well, for me, I've had this question and I can't comfortably answer it, but I think what I get from you is that, you know, the Keystone markup I get, that doesn't, that only applies if it's selling at full price. Well, it's not. Okay, so these are items that typically won't, because there's so much competition and very low barrier to entry, right? I mean, it really is a low barrier to entry.
Exactly. There's hardly zero barrier to entry, but you're competing with, I mean, and it's just gotten worse every year, and you're competing with 50 or 60 or 70 sellers. Some of these items, you slap it up on Amazon and there's 12 pages of sellers.
And would you say majority of those people are drop shippers based on your experience?
There's a lot of them are. Okay. A lot of them are. And what would surprise you is how much of those orders running through Amazon and Walmart and Target and Newegg are actually being drop shipped by those same distributors.
They do it themselves, you mean?
They do. Yeah. I toured one of my big distributors. I toured their warehouse. It's actually in Pennsylvania. And I toured the warehouse. Like, 400,000 square feet, some huge place, right? And I'm sitting there at this distributor's warehouse, and I'm watching Amazon logoed boxes flying down the rollers and Newegg boxes flying down the rollers. I'm like, whoa, this, am I in an Amazon warehouse or this warehouse? And they're like, yeah, well, a lot of what Amazon retail lists to sell, they don't actually have in their warehouse. We're just drop shipping for them, just like you are.
So they're a fulfillment service for Amazon, and Amazon saying, hey, when you do fulfill for us, you must use our boxes.
Right.
No kidding. I wonder if that's moving away from that as they continue to build out their network, because I assume that would happen in a lot of network places, or maybe it's on thin, I don't want to say low ranked. I mean, the other way, high ranked items that they just don't see a large, there's not a thin market. That's what I'm trying to say. Where it's a thin market, they're not carrying that stuff. And so they would take it to a third party channel, give up some margin and be content.
Right. Well, it diversifies their catalog. So they don't have to actually physically buy and store inventory for all those millions of products.
Right.
So, they're able to still list over 100,000 products from one particular distributor and make those available just like any other drop shipper would.
And yet they don't take possession. Is there any way to distinguish in the Amazon catalog whether Amazon is drop shipping an item?
Absolutely not.
No, it's just seamless. You never know. You would never know. Okay.
Especially with merchant fulfilled Prime now, it's seller fulfilled Prime. It's really impossible to tell.
So is drop shipping coming, growing, going away? What's happening with it?
I believe it's coming and going. It's ebbing and flowing. I'm seeing a surge, and that's really not a what's the word I'm looking for? I'm not trying to just kind of give a nonchalant answer. I think that a lot of people are trying it. That's been what we have done successfully for over a decade. So I have a lot of people asking me on Facebook and text message and email every day, how can I get started doing this? Some of them have been burned by product restrictions, brand restrictions, gatings on Amazon, suspensions. Some of them tried the private label route and they have a garage full of widgets from China that they can't sell now. And others are just wanting to diversify their platform. So I am seeing a lot of new people, jumping on board and doing that. At the same time, we've done it for over a decade, and we're beginning to cut back the amount of drop shipping that we're doing.
And let's talk about why you're doing that. I mean, this is a conscious decision. You're going to cut your – you believe that you're going to cut your sales in half this year. I mean, that's a big move.
It is. That's right.
And so what was the thinking? I mean, do you see – I mean, are you trying to – Ma'am, let me say it this way. This might be the right way to say it. Are you running away from something or towards something?
I am doing both simultaneously. Okay. The simple answer is, when you're operating on those smaller margins, mass drop shipping reputable big name brands that are offered through distribution that you're competing against everybody else in the world, your margins are very low. When you get to a point where we are, and you know, $14+ million in sales on every major marketplace, the overhead to sustain that is astronomical.
Well, walk us through that. Explain what that means. So, because you're selling on how many channels now? I think I lost count. Was it 5, 6? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight, and really the top three. I mean, so, right. And they probably do 80%, you know, Pareto, right? They probably 80% of your results come from those top three. So walk us through what kind of overhead you would incur in a dropship operator. Again, Steve being naive and not really understanding it.
Well, you've got IT, which to be able to manage all of those feeds, to be able to constantly be syncing inventory to make sure that you're not overselling, to be able to constantly manipulate price and manage the feeds to all the marketplaces, that's a lot of IT. We have integration software that routes orders electronically so that it's more of an automated thing. So actually we have less payroll hours because of that. Okay. Actually have less staffing because of some of the automation. But at the same time, customer service. I mean, we have four full-time customer service agents that just get yelled and cussed at every single day, all day, every day.
And why are they getting yelled at?
Because the item was the same reason that customers yell at anyone on these marketplaces. They thought they were getting something and they got something else, or it came damaged, or it didn't come on time, or they're mad because you made them signature requirement for it. And then the next customer's mad because you didn't ask for signature requirement. Okay. And they want to return it. They're a Walmart marketplace customer, and they didn't know they weren't buying it from Walmart. And why can't they just take it back to Walmart like they've always done, and so forth and so forth. It's just the nature of the beast. When you're processing 600 or 700 orders a day, there's going to be a pretty high rate of customer service inquiries and returns.
And you know, I always say this on shoes, I get 16% returns and normally 2% everywhere else. So and that's mostly Amazon. Is there one, you know, I've heard this, that Walmart specifically, because it's such a new marketplace, exactly what you're describing. They don't understand that you can't take it there. They don't understand the third party thing. Is that, where are you incurring most of your customer service calls? Is there a particular channel more so than the others?
Walmart's definitely the number one.
Okay.
They're still somewhat uneducated as to what the Walmart marketplace is.
Okay.
It's just a newer marketplace. And I will say that the executives at Walmart have done an outstanding job over the last year. This Christmas, as compared to last year's Christmas, was the 2016 holiday season. As compared to 2015 was a complete nightmare.
Yeah, even on Amazon, it was a nightmare, right? Moving inventory and everything else. Yeah, it was crazy.
Customers didn't know, and Walmart was still new. So Walmart would advertise a doorbuster for Black Friday, a video game for $29. And that same video game probably literally that it cost Walmart 40-something. So they were losing $20 per video game. On that, but they only had 100 of them. So by 8 a.m., they're all gone, and we're up there selling it for $70, which is, we're making, you know, $2 off of that. So we're selling it for 70, and even the chat support on Walmart's telling customers, oh, yeah, they'll honor the doorbuster price, you know, or we'll fix it after you check out. It was a nightmare, and so they took a lot of feedback from us and made it so much better over the last year.
And it's only going to improve. Again, it's experience, right? Every time, you know, just think of where Amazon has come to, right? They're a mature business, and think of what's really been improving. So when you take a loss, you know, the standard 2%, when you're operating on such thin margins as 5%, I mean, one loss just wipes out profit from how many sales? I mean, it's just incredible to think about. Because, you know, the ability to resell that item probably has gone down enormously, right? And recover hardly any of your, you know, any of your costs.
That's right. And most of the distributors that we work with, you know, accept returns.
So okay. Okay.
We're
so
able
you get
to get
that back.
Our credit back. And over the years, we've kind of refined and whittled down our vendor list to there's some brands that are just absolutely no returns whatsoever. And so we just quit selling those. We're like, yeah, we just won't sell it then. And so we've kind of refined that list. And part of that is why our sales are going to be going down, because we're making even more aggressive adjustments to say, you know what? If we can't return for full credit, no restocking fee, we don't want to sell this anymore, because we're not clearing enough profit margin to absorb two or three units that are lost. Then we, you know, put them on eBay as an open box and get pennies on the dollar for
right,
it.
Right. And, you know, somebody asked me this question, these mega drop sellers, the ones that are doing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in sales, you know, how are they, I mean, you know what the infrastructure you have to put together. How are they handling it, or are they handling it? Because you see feedback rates of 75% or 80%. I mean, it's just incredible how bad their rating is. Any clue? I mean, have you ever run into a mega dropshipper in your times?
Well, you know, yes, I would say so. They don't really advertise
right.
whether.
Well, you could tell though. You probably have that figured out though. You could tell.
Yeah, we've met a few of them at trade shows and vendor distributor trade shows and things like that. One beautiful thing, there's a few of the internet retailers, magazines, top 500, top 200 that are what I would call friendly competitors. So their execs and myself, we're on Skype together, and we're literally nickel and diming each other to get the buy box on Amazon. Yet we check in on Skype several times a week and, hey, I oversold three units. Can you help me out? Sure. Hey, got one the other day from one of these top 500 mega sellers who said, hey, Fred, hey, just be on the lookout. This particular brand is starting out the new year aggressively prosecuting sellers who are not abiding by MAP policy. So we help each other out. It's a very small circle, but a very wonderful circle that you can have trust with a few competing sellers to watch out, keep each other's back. One experience I had with a very, very, very large one, I believe maybe it was the second or third largest marketplace seller on Amazon several years ago, that in the blink of an eye went under, completely just imploded. And
what does that mean?
Was meaning somewhere along the line, they weren't paying attention to their books and to their numbers. And I can tell you, when you're running millions of dollars through your account every week, and you're operating on razor thin 4 or 5% margin, it doesn't take very many mistakes before you get in trouble quickly. And I think in this case, maybe they got a little overextended with cash flow and they couldn't pay a UPS bill. And so UPS froze all their shipments in transit. And when you have, you know, 1,000 plus orders a day, and all of a sudden UPS freezes all your shipments in transit, and a 2, 3, 4, 5 days go by on Amazon, it's over. It's hard to recover from that. All the negative feedback, the late shipments, and it's like a big snowball. It's pretty scary how that can happen.
Yeah, and you're completely gone very, very quick, outside of your control, right? Because it's all outside of your control.
Right.
So these fee changes that have happened, and I'm going to beat the horse a little bit more. I apologize. It's just that I don't get a chance to talk with dropshippers that often at this level. So bear with me if you wouldn't mind. Hopefully,
yeah,
you'll tell me if it gets too, you just tell me, but I'm going to beat a little bit more. So the fee changes that have been going on, how are you handling that? Is that part of the reason you're getting out of most of your dropshipping? I mean, how is that handled at these giant companies? I mean, I guess it's all electronic, but I mean, there's just so many changes, you know, for that high volume listing fee change, right? So they're going to, you know, there's a change where, hey, if it's old and it hasn't sold and blah, 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 the fee goes up. How are they able to do that? Or are they eating it? But even, you know, those little fees add up when you're talking pennies like that, right?
Well, and, you know, you'll have to educate me, because I'm not really familiar with any fee increases like what you just described. As far as marketplace commissions, they've been pretty standard across the board for as long as I can remember. So, you know, I think the biggest fee increase, you know, there's FBA fee increases, but that impacts everyone who's doing FBA. I think the biggest change that really kind of sent shockwaves to us was Amazon's policy this past fall, where all of a sudden they're going to do pre-approved prepaid returns for everybody that asks, pretty much. That impacted us in a significant way because we're not set up to be a returns processing center. But if we're drop shipping, typically if a customer reached out to us and said they wanted to return something, then we reach out to the distributor we bought it from, get the return, the RMA number from them, okay, and we send that to the customer. The customer sends it straight back to the original distributor, where we get a credit memo for the merchandise.
And you never touched it again. And so you're out nothing other than the Amazon fees.
Right. But now there's a FedEx and a USPS truck, a whole truck, you know, that unloads almost every day at our facility.
Wow. So, and then you've got to pay to ship it back to that other company, and you got to handle it.
Right.
And decide where does that go? Which company is that? Ooh.
So that's added payroll. That's added staffing. It's not great. Now, we've been able to override and opt out of a lot of those forced returns, so we've kind of nipped it in the bud to some degree. Amazon specifically has an override feature per SKU where you can actually say, we don't give you permission to do this because maybe we've got better return shipping rates than you do, or maybe it needs to be returned to a different warehouse. And that's the option that we chose, and we processed 130,000 SKU overrides for prepaid returns.
Wow. You know, what do you do when you come up against drop shippers that are drop shipping from Walmart? So let's use your example back with the $29, you know, video game. You can't buy it at that price, right? Your distributor wasn't even selling them at that price. How has that business affected you where people were using these third-party companies, this is not approved, right? Those practices, what you're doing is approved according to Amazon's drop shipping policy, correct?
Right.
Okay. So you're right within terms and you're doing everything right. How do these third parties using these, you know, using the Walmart model, for example, getting the free shipping from Walmart, because they're getting an advantage over you, correct?
They are, you know, but that's not necessarily very easy to accomplish. That takes a lot of research as well. And your inventory is going to be limited to that.
You know,
they're only going to get so many units. And we know that because we've oversold before and we've had to go to Walmart and Walgreens.com and Target.com and buy up everything on the internet that we could to fulfill a whole bunch of orders that we accidentally oversold on. So we've done that ourselves. And I don't know all the fine print and what is and isn't in the TOS at Amazon, but I'm not even sure that retail arbitrage in the sense or online that you went to Walmart.com and you bought stuff and then resold it. I'm not even sure that would be a violation.
Okay.
But don't quote me on that.
No, okay. Sure. I'm just trying to understand. So to make it right, your policy is to go make it right and eat the difference if you have to get that customer their product. Okay. But I assume there are people that aren't quite as ethical, you know, and that's probably where the challenges come up, you know. And I assume this is, you know, like you're describing, to manage that even sounds more complicated than what you're managing, which is pretty complicated.
Right. And well, the more you do it, you begin to, I mean, that's a rare situation. It's not like that. It happens all the time. And the more you fine tune your IT, you really minimize overselling and late shipments and things like that. So we keep a really high, you know, 96-97% positive customer feedback rating on Amazon and, top rated on eBay with like 99% positive. So I think we handle it fairly well.
Does your software allow you to get the buy box pretty much? I mean, is that's the way you're going? Are you using repricers separately, or does the you know, like I've seen these other drop shipping people that have their own software and it's very dedicated, that kind of thing. How are you managing that?
Well, we use Channel Advisor, which is an out-of-the-box cloud base. It's kind of the big daddy that everybody's heard of. We're Channel Advisor clients, and it handles all of that for us. It does all of our repricing, and it distributes all the products to all of the various marketplaces and brings in all the orders, and it's kind of the mothership of our entire operation.
Okay. And so you're really the, you become, like you said, a customer service operation, frankly, right? That's really where the effort is on your part. That's the hard part, because the rest of it, most of it is done through the software. And then finding products that are successful. How are you finding the products? I mean, are you using a particular software to be able to go out there and say, or is it the old, hey, trade shows, looking through catalogs, that kind of thing?
Well, for sense of like drop shipping purposes, we literally just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks.
Okay, so you don't care because you're not, if it doesn't sell, there's no fee, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so
we
mass list, but then we cull that data and we find the winners, and that's how we decide what we're going to wholesale, what we're going to FBA. Some of our private label items, we've got two private label brands and growing, and some of the products that we're making on our private label are inspired by similar products that are repeat sellers for us.
Okay. And so this is a perfect segue. So because you have access to such a large volume of data in the drop shipping world, right? You're seeing thousands and thousands of products, you're seeing patterns and trends. So that's your data. You're able to use that data and narrow down and say, ooh, these are winners. And therefore, these are winners I want to go after. So walk me through, why would, you know, let's just, Steve's coffee cup is sitting here, and you were selling it drop shipping and making your, you know, 5%, whatever it is. You see it selling at a good volume. You decide, hey, this might be a wholesale opportunity. Is that kind of how, am I oversimplifying it?
No, that's exactly what happens every day.
Okay, so you find a product because of your data, and it's your data. It's not anybody else's, and it's a big advantage. So therein lies one of the reasons that somebody might consider drop shipping, because you have huge amounts of data that you can see trends.
Yeah.
So how do you go about getting that coffee mug now? Because you can buy it, and every one of your competitors can buy it from your distributor. And
right.
They're not the manufacturer. So now you got to go out and find the manufacturer, and then that's where the work is?
Well, no, I could still get it from my distributor, and I could just probably get a better pricing.
Okay, you know? But you're not letting them ship it, so you buy it at their wholesale rate. So you say, okay, drop shipping, it's $12. Wholesale, it's $8.
Yeah, and to be completely transparent and honest, which that's the way I roll. Nothing to hide, right?
Appreciate it.
When you're – and I don't want this to sound arrogant. I say this with all humility, but when you're kind of at the place where we have been the last few years, in most cases, there's very little difference between wholesale and single unit dropship. Our pricing is key pricing. It's as good as it gets because we have distributors that we pay $500,000 a month. Sometimes.
So wait. So I'm not getting that. Okay. So this coffee mug sells retail for $10. The wholesale price is $5. You're saying the price you're getting as being a drop shipper is what?
Well, let's say that it's $5.
That's the wholesale price.
Right. If I buy it as a drop ship order and you just order two of them and I buy two, it costs me $10. If I buy 100 of them, I'm still going to pay $5 each because I've already got the best price because of our volume. Where the significant savings happens is on the shipping.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm going to pay $7-$8 to ship that coffee mug to you that I bought for $5. Or I can buy 100 of them and pay $18, you know, to have the whole master carton shipped to FBA, who then will be fulfilling the orders for much cheaper than I ever could have.
Okay, so you're making the money there. That's where you're going to make your money. So you got two places you're making your money. One, you're paying a much lower per, because it's one transaction, but it's the cost, while it's heavier, right? It's spread amongst 100 units or whatever that master carton is. So the cost, like you said, was $7 or $8. Now it's down to, you know, 80 cents or whatever it is per unit. You're sending it into Amazon. Now, the risk there then is that you're paying storage fees and that kind of thing, right? So there's some art there, buying the right quantity and sending them in, because you got all that other stuff to start considering, right?
Right.
And then you make them, you make your profit on the lower fees that Amazon charges to ship versus your drop shipper. Because in your case, you said they're $7 or $8. In this scenario, they might be, you know, $3.99 or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can make up margin.
And we can
way.
Also, yeah. And another thing we could do is we could buy all the inventory.
And then you and control then, the market.
Right. Because everybody else that was drop shipping it, like I was, can't have it anymore.
How do you know that, though? How do you, you know, because if you go to, like, I don't, you're going to be in Vegas and ASD, right? And so when you go there, you know, one of the things that really struck me was these Brita water filters. And I'm like, oh, those are cool. Really nice. And then I saw them. And then I went down another aisle. And I saw them again, and I went another aisle, and I saw them different color, but the same. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's 13 people. I think I stopped counting at 13 selling the same product. And they're all, you know, liquidators or what have you. And I'm thinking, huh. So if somebody was going to buy them up, they'd have to go. And this is just at this event. So how do you know? You're just hoping, or is that experience again because you've been doing it for so long?
I believe that I'm telling you the truth when I say, with all the experience in the world, you still don't know.
Okay.
It's still a roll of the dice. It's still a gamble. You know, we're hooked into a whole lot of distributors, so I could search by manufacturer part number, and I can see who all has it and how many.
Okay. So there you go.
I have a tool that I can just go in and paste the UPC code, and it's going to list out of about maybe 30 distribution partners that we're connected to, it's going to show every distribution partner that has that in stock, how many they have and what their price is.
Is this a custom design tool, or is this, don't tell your secret sauce. Don't give it all.
It's a little of the secret sauce. It's okay. Some of the way that interacts with the rest of the system.
Okay. So that's sophistication. Okay. So let's pause for a pro tip moment. The ability, that's what you're competing with. So when people, you know, there's a reason that people aren't, you know, having the success in drop shipping that somebody who's invested that much time and money, right? There's nothing cheap, right, to get that developed over time. That's a pro tip right there. When you're competing against that, you have a slight advantage. Not, it's not perfect, right? As you say, you can't know it for sure, but you have a better, you have a little more calculation in your risk model.
There is, yeah.
Okay.
And there's so many other variables that go into it. There's the pricing, you know, the bulk pricing. You get to a certain point. For example, Netgear. We sell Netgear, and because of the amount of Netgear that we sell, we're platinum partners with the Netgear partner program. So we have the largest discounts available. So if you signed up for an account with one of our, with this tech data that I mentioned earlier, it's an IT type distributor. If you signed up and opened your account tomorrow, I could be getting the same Netgear switch for $40 cheaper than you.
No kidding. It's that material.
Yeah. And then all of these partner programs that you can enroll in. And I want to just say that to all your listeners that are trying this, it's not that you can't succeed. These are the kind of things that you want to hear and that you want to learn. Most of these manufacturers have partner programs that are free to join, and they have all these perks and benefits that you can go back. And I mean, I've got 3 or 4 pieces of plastic in my wallet from different brands that load up a prepaid card every month with spiffs, with back-end sales rebates on things that you sell. That, you know, I could have one that might have $700 or $800 on it in a month just from little $10 per unit back end rebates.
And that you could then go and purchase something else and get a $700 or $800 discount in theory. Right. So you already got a good price, but now you just took $700 or $800 off from whatever. And in theory, your price just went lower on that. And so now all of a sudden you can make another march. Oh, I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Or
okay.
Just take your wife out to a really nice steak dinner.
You know, I wasn't going there, but okay. All right. I think the horse is dead. I think I really appreciate you digging that deep on it. I'm sorry to peel it back that far, but it's rare that I get access to it, so I had to dig.
My pleasure.
No, I appreciate it. So you also are but a wholesaler. So you're converting over to wholesale because you can control it a little bit more. Now, do you have a warehouse that you're starting to handle that? Because that's the burden stuff that you start running into, right? On the other end of the spectrum where you had nothing. Now you have to start dealing with it. But again, you had already said that you were starting to deal with it anyway. As you said, they're dropping off packages every day. So what's the plan there? What are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, with all of this that's happened over the last years, I literally just moved out of my home about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. This all operated out of my bonus room over the garage, and then all of my employees were remote. So they worked from home, or they worked from a coffee shop, or wherever. And a lot of them were local, so we'd get together and have meetings, but they all worked from home. I really began to get discouraged when I would come home and my foyer would be full of returned
yeah.
items and packages and drop-offs.
A 5-pound, you know, or 500-foot box with one little dinky item in it, right?
Yeah. Well, and when we started doing more wholesale, some of these orders require signature because of the value. And when they come to your house and there's no one there to sign for it, then... So anyway, long story short, 2-3 years ago, we moved into a commercial space here on St. Simon's Island where we live. So then we got a little bit of warehouse storage and a receptionist. It's a beautiful facility. It's just amazing. And there's a shared receptionist and a shared boardroom. And so we have someone that you could check in packages, and we've got storage for inventory and daily pickup with FedEx. And so, you know, it's really kind of changed the game for us in that capacity.
And yet you didn't have to lease a, you know, 100,000 square foot facility. So you have found kind of a shared working environment, which is probably the best of everything, right? So you got to pay for that service, but you're paying for the service you use.
Right.
Which is really, really efficient because you're not paying all that extra overhead. And that's a great,
right.
that's a great way. And, you know, it's funny. I think that's the way your drop shipping business is, where you're rubbing nickels to make sure you're using everything. That seems like a trend. Is that the way you approach? I mean, is that the whole business model? No matter what you're doing, you just think that same way? I mean, is that now ingrained in you?
It is. Well, and the other thing is, and I realize this is maybe a controversial topic, but I'm a cash guy. When I say I'm not a believer in debt, I don't mean like in a judgmental way, but I'm not a fan of debt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of leveraging debt to grow my business. I did that for several years and almost lost everything.
Mm.
So when I'm a Dave Ramsey fanatic, and got a hold of Dave Ramsey and Financial Peace University and Financial Freedom, and my wife and I were, well, I'll say I hid it from my wife. We were about 65K in debt as I was doing the old saying, you got to spend money to make money.
Mm.
And I was spending a lot of money, but I wasn't making enough money. And I was running out of money and running up credit cards, and all the while never telling my wife because I didn't want to worry her. And this was business debt. And so I separated that in my head. And I thought, you know, I'm going to turn this around. I'm going
to work through it. Yeah,
I can work through it. No sense in worrying her, until finally the day came when Fred's little surplus check from his side business that supplements our family budget, I wasn't able to pay it.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so that wasn't a fun conversation.
I was going to say, that must have been an awkward moment. It's like, well, you see,
not good at all.
But it probably relieved, it probably took a huge burden off your shoulders. Because the guilt and the shame, right? I mean, you had to feel it.
It was guilt, shame. You feel like a failure. And a friend put us on to Dave Ramsey, who is not a fan of credit cards, debts, or anything like that. And so we got aggressive, and we spent the next 24 months of our life just being frugal and attacking. And after about a year and a half, we'd paid off the whole debt. We'd paid off all our car loans, and being debt-free is pretty remarkable, and I never want to go back. So I actually run my business the same way.
Hmm.
If I don't have the money and retained earnings and cash capital to buy it, then I just have to pass the deal. And I let some deals come and go where it's just more cash than I have up front to, you know. And of course, with our business credit cards, on the volume of drop shipping, the balances every month are huge, six figures. But we know that we're on top of that. We pay all that off every month.
Well, because you have the money up front. Again,
right.
You're collecting the customer's money up front. So if you spend $100,000, you took in, you know, $150,000, whatever it is, right?
Yep.
Right.
So
okay.
The private labeling and the wholesale changes that now, because I'm investing into wholesale that I may or may not sell, and I'm investing into private label products that I may or may not sell. So that changes things a bit, but I'm still following the same principle where we're going to make sure that there's cash to pay for it up front. And plenty of cash in the bank. This is my tip for anyone who interviews me, is for your listeners, is to set back some of those retained earnings. And you'll appreciate this as a numbers guy and an accountant. Set back some of that retained earnings for emergencies, for emergency fund, 3, 4, 5 months of your company expenses, because Murphy will visit your home.
It will rain, right? So you better have an umbrella. You need an umbrella. Do you, So thinking about switching to that private label model, you said you were creating brands.
Right.
What are you trying to create? Because you've created a business, or have you?
Oh, no, we've definitely created a business.
Okay, so you've created a business. So let's, on the dropshipping side, you've created a business. The wholesale and private label, what are you trying to create there?
I'm trying to add to the existing business.
Okay.
It all falls underneath our corporate structure. So it's all part of the same entity. It's just different trade names.
Okay.
But that's going to accomplish several things. Number one, it diversifies our catalog more. But number two, like I said, when we started, I'm 46. I'll be 47 this year. My son is 16. We just met with his high school counselor to get his 11th grade classes assigned. He's going to be taking a college class now out of the college. And I'm beginning to realize that time's running out.
Mm.
And I want to work smarter and not harder. And I wanted to begin to see the profit margin of my company, the net sale margin, really expand. And so all the work for 3, 4, 5% net margin, I actually went through the process last year of potentially selling my company.
Okay.
All the way through to due diligence and working with brokers. And I began to realize that if I could increase my net margin even by 3 or 4% overall, that it would have a dramatic impact on my sales price. And really, it would have a dramatic impact on the way I would live the rest of my life.
So you're looking to create a real standalone business. I mean, something, as you're saying, that's got enough margin, that's really got some value to it.
Correct.
When you went and looked, you were mostly a dropshipper selling the business. You were mostly a dropshipper at that point, right? And so the value that you would be selling was probably the proprietary software that you developed, that you mentioned, and the relationships with those couple hundred distributors, right? That's really the intangible that would be the value, because anybody can go buy these products, but you just need to know what products and where to get them, and then know how to get them, right? That's really what you were selling.
Yeah, that was that, and our trade name, and the ability to inherit that and maintain, to continue to have that revenue and
did
that
they,
cash flow.
Did they suggest a number of EBITDA or anything like that they would sell as a multiple?
With ours, it started out being a 3 multiple, but it dropped down a little bit to like 1.5.
Okay, so 1.5 multiple of EBITDA. Where
right.
was it? Okay. All right. I just want to make sure I understood it. You would not have a lot of value. After, you know, you could sell that huge amount and then realize that you wouldn't make a lot of money on a sale, right?
Right.
So therefore, if you can bring up that margin to a reasonable amount, you could then take it to that. Okay, I buy it. I love it.
Yeah, well, you know, an FBA, the wholesale, that's always better margin. So right now, if it's less than 10 to 15% on wholesale, I don't want to fool with it. And on the private label, you know, you're looking at 35 to 40%
right.
margin.
Period, right.
So, yeah, you mix that in with a whole lot of volume at 5, 4, 5, 6%. Then You know, and when I say 3-5%, that's like net after everything.
Right, so. You got to pay all those other people. Right? We get it. I mean, there's a lot of expense in there. But, I mean, you know, I tell people this. This is my experience, is that I see a 17 to 20% net margin after paying all those people in taxes and insurance and all the jazz, the warehouses and stuff that I got to pay. 17 to 20% is about normal on mostly a wholesale model. And yeah, that's what I see. And so, and there's private label in there too. So I shouldn't say, and there's probably some retail arb and there's some eBay junk, you know, stuff that we sell. So some of those margins are amazing, but you know, the volume isn't there.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're really pulling it together. Do you get a something different building a brand? Is there a different sense of a conflict? Because you've been there, done that with the dropship where you've, hey, we sold our first million. Hey, we hit the 5 million. Hey, we hit 10 million, right? That's probably not as exciting anymore. Are you getting something different in your, I don't want to use your soul because, you know, that's probably not the right term. Are you feeling something different? Is there a different, you know, sense of accomplishment or, you know, is there something that's, you're feeling different?
Totally.
Hmm.
Completely. Absolutely. I set up another private label brand maybe about a month ago. And, I mean, we don't have our first product completely out yet. And I got the Shopify store set up. I actually never use Shopify. All my other sites are BigCommerce. And so I decided everybody talks about Shopify so much. I'm going to try Shopify. So I set up a Shopify site with this new brand and, our first, you know, product. And then I threw in some kind of the open brand concept. I threw in some other name brands that were in the same niche so that I had a catalog. And man, we got, you know, that cha-ching ching on Spotify, the first order last week. I mean, it was really like 24 hours after the site went live, we had our first order. And it was just one order, you know, for like $165. But still, I felt like a kid at Christmas.
That's awesome.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is our own. And yeah, the sense of holding something in your hand that has your logo and your name and your brand, it's very satisfying. I've really enjoyed that. And that is an asset that's very transferable and very valuable.
Right. And that's enriching. Yes, that is sellable. And when you're selling at a multiple, even if it's a 1.5 multiple, and when it's, but you've got, you know, great margins, then it's a much, much better business. Hmm. Okay.
And
so
your multiples going to be much better on that than 1.5 too. So
nice. Okay. So what's next? What are you going to do? So you're going to cut your sales intentionally in half. You're, as you said, culling some of your distributors, especially the ones with the, not the terms. You know, there's new, you know, you have a line in the sand saying you must meet these terms, and if you don't, they're gone. So you're going to cut 50% of your sales. 80% of your sales were drop shipped before. What's your goal?
Yeah, my goal is to eliminate a lot of the drop shipping that is not valuable or has really low margin or is causing customer service issues. Product line, their entire categories of products that are much more prone to generate customer service issues than others. So I'm beginning to weed those out.
So give me an example of one of those. So everybody used to say electronics would be one that would be a real pain in the butt.
Electronics are just a royal pain.
Okay.
They're so easy to get into, very hardly any effort to get into it. But yeah, and you'll get a lot of volume on that, but they're a real pain.
Okay.
Whereas sporting goods, for example, is hardly any returns at all. It's very, very low.
Okay.
And a lot of the health and personal care items are very low on returns. So I'll be tweaking that, doing more FBA, a lot more FBA and wholesale and increasing. I'd like to have, you know, probably 2 to 3, maybe 4 new products per brand. So I can see possibly 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe new products in 2017 on our private label brands.
That's awesome.
And maybe a third private label brand that's brewing on the side that I haven't pulled the trigger on yet. I'm waiting on some counsel with that one. So that's going to have us working a lot smarter and a lot less. It's going to minimize overhead, minimize expense. For me personally, I'm trying to really delegate what I know to my team even more. Of my sales manager, I've empowered him this year with things that I used to always do. Even today, there was a manufacturer that called a couple of times about their partner program. There was a distributor that called about promo pricing and how we could run some promos on some marketplaces. I used to be the guy that would take all those and try to deal with them on Friday when our church office was closed, and all my other pastor friends go play golf, and I would go to my office and work all day. So I'm delegating more of that and beginning to devote a little more of my time doing some coaching and mentoring and kind of sharing a decade's worth of knowledge on podcasts like this and on Facebook, and just kind of trying to help some other people pass the torch a little bit.
I mean, it's interesting, you know, as I sit back and I think about the education that you got, you know, it took you, you know, you're selling millions of dollars, hundreds and or thousands of products, right? And you were able, though, to parse that down to give you kind of a gauge on what sells. That's very cool. So while it was a big education, I mean, that's a grad school degree right there that you were able to get. The IT stuff that you started developing early on in your career in one role or another, even though you had a person there, you still had to learn some of it, or at least how to communicate with those guys, which is hard. And then as you started learning your own training and getting your stores open and stuff like that, that serves you well now. So it seems to me that all these things have served you well for where you're going. It seems like they're all pointing you in a pretty good direction and really pointing, kind of, you know, narrowing down that channel. Will you drop any of the channels? I mean, if you're in electronics, you got to be on Newegg. I mean, let's face it, you know, but
right.
People try to sell shoes on Newegg. I can't imagine there's any success there, but people try. Have you looked at closing any of those channels down? I mean, you had a couple that I hadn't even heard of.
Yeah, we've closed a few down. We haven't really seen much success on Rakuten ever.
Right.
It's a hard marketplace.
I buy liquidation from Rakuten. Is that crazy? I literally buy liquidation from Rakuten.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's weird how it gets to me, but it's okay. It's just odd.
Yeah, that is. We did really well on Best Buy, so we were sad when the Best Buy marketplace closed. They closed with 24-hour notice.
Ooh.
That was one where the whole thing about having some money stashed aside in your business was good, not being leveraged on debt, because they closed with 24-hour notice, and then they kept our last two disbursements for 6 months.
No kidding. Just to make sure that they handle returns and everything else gets clean. Wow, that's painful.
Right.
That's painful. So if you were completely leveraged, you were out of business.
For us, that was like $70,000 that we had to float, because we'd already paid our vendors for all that, that product.
Wow.
And we're counting on getting paid every week from Best Buy. Instead, it was 6 months. So,
okay.
But yeah, I make adjustments and cut marketplaces as needed.
Okay. And so you're just going this route. You're not the only person. I think you're my third drop shipper who has really cut back their drop ship life. And it was very similar. It's just things that they couldn't control. The margins were getting weaker. The fees that were constantly changing affected things. And they could just see it, you know, just not getting any easier. It just doesn't sound like it gets any easier. There wasn't any light at the end of the tunnel for them.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I think the drop shipping is still fantastic. And we will still do that. But really, what you want to find is, Getting started, it was easy to get started with all these big distributors and these big well-known brands. But it's finding niche markets and niche brands and small brands that you could still drop ship. Then you have your margins because there's no competition.
Right. If it was easy to find them.
As well.
Right. If it was easy to find them, guess what? Everybody else, it's easy to find them, right? Right. I mean, that's the truth.
Exactly.
All right. That makes sense. Okay. So somebody has a question, somebody wants to reach out to you. You have a Facebook group called eBusiness Online, right? eBusiness Online. And then do you have a website called eBusiness Online too? Is that?
Yeah, it's ebusinessonline.com. It has a hyphen after the E. I'm not lucky enough to have the domain without the dash in it. So it's e-businessonline.com.
Okay, so let me, e-businessonline. And on Facebook, it's a discussion, right? It's a free group, free Facebook group. You probably want to make sure they're real, right? So they got a request to join.
Right.
And that is where they can talk about these kind of things. But on e-business online, you have a podcast. And so you just started, but you're doing it, which I applaud. Stay with it, right? It's not easy. Not easy.
That's right.
But, you know, you're successful if you just keep doing it. And so you have a podcast, and I'll have a link to it, e-business, on the website, or just go to it, right? And tell
right.
Fred said hi. And you're available if people have questions?
Absolutely. I'd love to hear from them.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Man, it's a great story. I love the story. I love the way you figured it out. I mean, again, for me, this is little Steve just sitting there as watching from the sideline. You definitely, one thing has led to another. Joy Packard always says that. It really has in your life. And it really seems like it's leading you to a place you want to go. And to me, that's the coolest part. When you can build that lifestyle business and you can work on your life, because to me, that's the most important word in there. I think that's a great story. And man, I appreciate you taking the time, especially with four kids under 18. Woo, man, you got your hands full. Appreciate it.
Yes,
thank you.
Indeed.
Man, thank you so much. Wish you nothing but success. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Are you looking for inventory this time of year?
I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are million-dollar-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com. Thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you.
This is a great contextual interview, because I think it just gives you some perspective on what else is out there, how other people are dealing with this, what potential there is. You know, the one of the beautiful things about doing these interviews is I learn what I don't want to do. And I think if you can take that perspective and say, oh, that's cool for him because he's wired that way and he's good at it. That's not Steve. If you could do that for yourself and figure out which one you like and which direction you want to go, and then go all in on it. Go all in on it, outsource the rest, and you're going to have incredible success. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.